Right on. Welcome to Mountain Man Nutrition Podcast. My name is Jeffrey Hipschman, and I'm your host. I'm a professional chef and a nutritional therapist practitioner, and my focus is reversing type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance. And my next guest today is Krista Reimel. Now, Krista has been in the healthcare industry for over 20 years. She's worked in emergency medicine, cardiac care, orthopedics, primary care, most importantly, diabetes education and endocrinology. She has a master's degree in healthcare leadership, as well as advanced training from the Institute of Lifestyle Medicine at Harvard Medical School. Super awesome, very intelligent conversation. And I'm excited to have Krista here. She has a retreat center called the Points Retreats, and they do everything from diabetes education to really all chronic disease education, healthy cooking. They do biohacking at the retreats. So it's like, super exciting. And I follow a lot of what they do at the retreats and what kind of retreats they're having coming up awesome all the time. And it is awesome. They also do continuous glucose monitoring, which is, I think, on the forefront of diabetes education and knowing exactly what your blood sugar is doing at every moment. It's intense and it's super awesome and it's great education. And I hope you love this podcast with Krista, because I did, and I'm super excited to have her on. Right on. This is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition with one more podcast coming to you from Denver, Colorado. And I have a fantastic, super intelligent, super exciting guest, Krista Reimel. And this is, hi, Krista. How you doing today?
Hi, Jeffrey. I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. So Krista has a background in nursing and nursing management, as well as healthcare management. And she also has an amazing retreat center called the Point Retreats. And she also does, which is really exciting for me, is continuous glucose monitoring. And so I really wanted to have you on the podcast to really talk about your knowledge, your understanding of type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, as well as talk a little bit about your retreats and the glucose monitoring. So just a little bit of history so people listening can get a little bit of sense of who you are and what you're about.
Sure. Yeah, well, thank you for having me on today, Jeffrey. I appreciate you hosting me on your podcast.
So my
background, as you said, it's in nursing. I'm a nurse by training, an RN. Spent a number of years being a bedside nurse, and then transitioned into various leadership roles in a large healthcare system. And my last position was as director of endocrinology and diabetes care for four hospitals and 28 clinics. I oversaw the care there for roughly 30,000 patients with both type 1 and type 2 diabetes, along with a fabulous team of roughly 50 educators, nurses, dietitians, endocrinologists, support staff. So my passion for diabetes has come from watching years of both clinicians and patients, struggles and growths and wins and successes and all that goes into the lifestyle of, managing diabetes, both from the clinical side and from the patient person's side, and developing, passion around improving care in the space of blood sugar management and diabetes.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing now to help people fight this horrific chronic disease.
Yes. So currently I am the owner and co-founder of what's known as the Point Retreats. It is a functional and lifestyle medicine retreat center in northern Minnesota. It's a couple hours out of the Twin Cities area. And myself and a fabulous team of colleagues, all with different backgrounds in the health and wellness and medical space, host these retreats for people to learn how to improve their overall health. People can really show up with an active chronic disease that they're managing. Maybe they're coming with a disease that they've seen that their parents suffered from and they want to prevent, and or they're just looking how to improve their overall health and or performance. So we see people in a wide range on the health and wellness spectrum, and really, quite frankly, we welcome everyone. Where blood sugar management fits in is we know now that blood sugar elevations are linked to many, many, many chronic diseases, such as Alzheimer's, such as cancer, such as autoimmune diseases. And so a focus that we have at the Point Retreats that will interject into every retreat at some point is the importance of understanding blood sugar's role in disease management or prevention, and then giving people the knowledge and the tools to better understand that and better know how to manage their blood sugars through diet, exercise, lifestyle. We bring in the continuous glucose monitor. That's something that I have a fair amount of experience with in terms of the managing someone with diabetes and all of the relevance that a continuous glucose monitor can have for someone in improving their blood glucose management with the disease of diabetes. And I'll be honest with you, it is still a newer technology that really its most important use is for a insulin dependent type 2 diabetic or someone with type 1 diabetes. I mean, I would, as the first priority of CGM, I wish it was in every person with type 1 or insulin dependent type 2's hands. And unfortunately, that is still not happening. It's not uncommon that insurance will still deny somebody with insulin dependent type 2 diabetes a CGM, which is a tragedy, because that's really who it's designed most importantly for. And that even happens with type 1 diabetes. I'm surprised when we've been at events where we've had the CGM and have been open and available for conversation, how many type 1s are still coming to us. Like, well, I've never heard of this before, or, you know, what can I do with this, or how could this help me? And that is the most important focus and purpose for the CGMs. But the space that we're taking it is in all that we've learned in the last decade about chronic disease management prevention, knowing that blood glucose is an underlying factor for most chronic disease, why are we waiting for people to be diagnosed with a debilitating chronic disease before we give them the information and the knowledge to prevent the disease?
Absolutely. So, couldn't you, like, you see the numbers, you get your A1C and you're approaching, you know, you're at a 6.1, you know, and even now you're at a 6.3 or 6.6. Why not prevent it now?
Exactly, Jeffrey. And people get so frustrated, understandably so, you know, when they come and have conversations with, say, a diabetes nurse educator, a diabetes educator, or their family practice doc, primary care doc, and they'll say, you know, why didn't anybody tell me what I could do back when I was had pre-diabetes? And it was, you know, oftentimes what they're told is, well, just exercise a little bit more, lose some weight. Well, I mean, that's helpful for no one, really.
Right, exactly.
Most of us would like to do that, you know, and just snap a finger and that would happen. But we don't understand or have the knowledge or the tools how to make that happen. And the CGM used as a preventative tool is really personalized. So, you know, Jeffrey, what makes your blood sugars rise might be really different than what makes my blood sugars rise. For you, it could be a banana. For me, it could be a chocolate chip cookie. You know, for me, it might be I am always struggling with sleep. So maybe sleep is one of my issues that's causing blood sugar issues. And if I can correct that, that will have an impact on my overall health.
It is so phenomenal. Like, how many people are spiking at 2-3 in the morning, like their blood sugar, you know, and not knowing it?
Absolutely. And you know what's really interesting? I'll share this with you. So we just had a retreat this fall with a relatively healthy and fit group of healthcare professionals. And each of them went home with a continuous glucose monitor inserted. And we just got back all the results and downloaded all of them. And nobody had major concerns. Nobody had diabetes. And we didn't expect to find that. But we did find with certain people different common themes in terms of elevations. One of them being, as they were all traveling back from the retreat, almost, I'd say 60% of the group had elevations. So what do you do with that information? Well, this is in a relatively fit and healthy group that with the stress of travel, the stress of being on a time crunch was still elevating their blood sugars because all of them, relatively speaking, ate kind of the same thing that day.
Yeah.
And so it was really stress-related. So it doesn't mean you stop traveling. It doesn't mean you never come to a retreat and travel. But what it does mean is if you're someone whose lifestyle is you're hopping on a plane every week, it's really important for you to understand from a really comprehensive standpoint what is making your blood sugar spike on top of stress. Because I can almost guarantee you stress is going to cause elevation. So if you're also then stopping at all the fast food restaurants through the airport, you're not sleeping, you're in different time zones. Whoops, I forgot my medication. Shoot, I forgot my supplements. That repeated lifestyle over and over and over subjects you to, developing diabetes at an earlier age. So we want to help people understand what's happening in their lifestyle that they can possibly, tweak or control or improve so they can avoid the chronic diseases that we're now seeing being diagnosed at an alarmingly high rate.
It is phenomenal technology, and I'm so interested in it. And I just did a type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance reversal class, a cooking class last night. And people get they get bug eyed when I tell them that bread, if you're still eating bread, can spike your blood sugar more than eating sugar. And people what? But if you have a monitor in and you have a piece of bread or if you have a potato and you absolutely see the results of what's happening inside your body, it's life-changing. Because people can tell you, I can tell you how to eat all day long or make recommendations. But until you see some results right in your face, it's profound, right?
And you know that there are results that are pertinent to you. And they're 24/7. I mean, this monitors your blood sugar 24 hours, 7 days a week for up to 2 weeks. So you really get a good glimpse at what's impacting your blood sugars. And you're right. I mean, for most of us, information is easy to find, right? Thanks to Google, Dr. Google and Google everything about health. Now we can find out information on a lot. So Jeffrey, you can talk to people and it's valuable. I can talk to people and it's still valuable. We still have to teach. We still have to educate. But really what drives behavior change for people, and I'm including myself in this because I've won the CGM multiple times. I had gestational diabetes in my third pregnancy, so I know my risk factors. So I have an abundance of information. I've sat in more conferences than I can count and had more courses than I can count on health, wellness, medicine. But until I sometimes see my own results, I can find myself on slippery slopes that the CGM helps me go, okay, all right, here's where I have to make improvements. Here's what I have to do. Here's what I can do. Here's what I can't, shouldn't do. And then that helps me make better choices.
Right on. I'm interrupting this segment right here to let you know that if you want to advertise a business or a product on this podcast, you can do that. Just DM me and we will negotiate an awesome deal for you. And if you are a nonprofit, DM me, a high quality nonprofit that's actually doing some good for people. I would get you on this podcast for free and let you advertise for free. So let me know and we'll get right back to the recording. My blood sugars are down in the fives now. And of course, I'm not where I want to be coming from up in the eights. But, if I eat almond butter, I want to know what that's doing to me to know if I should be eating almond butters or a handful of cashews or, what is, the awesome soup borscht doing to me, what are all these foods that I'm putting in? Because I think I'm eating really healthy. I'm eating a high fat, moderate protein, mostly, good, healthy solids and vegetables. But which exact foods are doing what to me? And I think that is vital information for ultimate health.
Yeah. It is. It's really interesting. I will tell you, I've worked with some individuals with really high A1Cs, and the data that you get from the CGM, kind of those things that you just want to, you know, dismiss as being a big deal. Or, you know, for a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't, you know, I have a bowl of oatmeal. It's healthy with a lot of fruit on it and milk. And it's like, well, actually, this is what that's doing to your blood sugar. But sometimes it's hard to, you know, you can talk till you're blue in the face. But then when you see what it's doing, it's like, well, it's no longer about, you know, you trying to change the behavior, Jeffrey. It's about someone really looking at what their body's doing, and that tends to drive behavior change more. And, you know, the other piece that's so interesting is overnight. I mean, most people are not checking their blood sugars overnight, nor do they need to. But it's really interesting to see what you do all day, how that has an impact on what happens overnight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even those things like, you know, bread or, you know, the different fats, you know, we have seen more interesting things in our CGM studies. Like, I could honestly write a book at this point. Things that people never thought they'd find that they find.
I'll be waiting for it to come out.
Okay, I'll start working on it. But people who are on the carnivore diet, you know, how their body then responds or kind of hyper responds when glucose is introduced. People who are on a keto diet who then kind of flip, say, out of ketosis and, you know, kind of flip in between the two as they're trialing the CGM, what kind of responses they have. People who've gotten IV vitamin C, I mean, people who have, you know, not taken their medication versus taking it, people with sleep apnea who didn't want to accept they had sleep apnea, we find that on the CGM, that's you know, where their blood sugars are constantly elevated all night long. In terms of pharmaceuticals and dosing of medication for clinicians, it's incredibly valuable in terms of fine-tuning dosing. When I go through the presentation I give on CGMs, I have a few case studies I put in there, and this is not a criticism of clinicians, but I don't think people understand how we really blindly adjust insulin and adjust medications. Mm-hmm. I mean, an A1C is a 90-day average, right?
Yeah.
And we will go in and blind, I mean, what I consider kind of blindly, because we have to do something if it's elevated, we'll start adjusting medication, which is what the information clinicians have, so that's what they have to work with. But once you see a CGM study, you kind of are like shocked that we would actually adjust someone's insulin without that accurate of information.
Right.
Because it's kind of a crapshoot. You know, you're doing your best with what you have, but boy, we could sure do a heck of a lot better if we had a CGM study as we're adjusting medication, yeah, as we're adjusting lifestyle.
And that's important too, and it excites me because, and this is where talking to you is so great, because you have this, you're using technical, pharmaceutical, like, you know, state-of-the-art stuff with a holistic way of life and holistic cooking, you know, and, yeah, and whole foods. And you're merging these two disciplines together, and it's the modern way to go. And yeah, for people who have to be on insulin at first, and of course they want to get off insulin because nobody wants to be on insulin their whole life.
Right.
Right. And it's so difficult to get off of it. Having, yeah, this, and I want to ask you that, how many people and how do you see this working together to get people eventually off the insulin where they're just managing it with, say, some supplements and or just diet and exercise? And have,
right,
you seen,
right,
this? Is this is one of your goals, I'm sure, yeah?
Yeah. You know, I would say it is absolutely possible, but it takes a strong engagement from both the person or the patient to want to have that as their goal and accomplish that goal. And it takes, you know, a strong mindset that they're willing to be a team member with their clinician, and their clinician in turn has to be willing to be highly engaged in this person's care. And sometimes it takes multiple team members, but it can be done. I've seen it happen. It takes a lot of monitoring, a lot of adjusting, a lot of commitment, you know, trials and tribulations, but it absolutely can be done. This particular case that I can think of, I brought someone into the ER who had a blood sugar of over 800, and they had a CGM on when they were brought into the ER, and then we watched, they had a CGM on almost consecutively for 6 weeks as we worked with adjusting their medication and lifestyle. And this person, for the 2 weeks that they were almost hospitalized, the entire time their blood sugars never came down below 500. And once they got home and had some significant education and consistent follow-up with their home health care nurse, their diabetes nurse, their pharmacist, their coach, 6 weeks later, they were on, I would say, half the amount of insulin as they were initiated on just the prior 6 to 8 weeks in the ER.
That's awesome.
And that's just in a pretty tiny time frame with someone who their pancreas was very compromised. I mean, to be able to have your pancreas, you know, be dysfunctional to the point where your blood sugars get to 800, it's a pretty significant compromise in the pancreatic function.
Yeah.
And you know, this person with a lot of dramatic changes in commitment was able to half their amount of insulin, and they're still working on decreasing it and succeeding. I have seen other people who, you know, we talked a little bit about POP, and you know, I've seen people who are drinking like liters of POP. and you know, it's one of those things where it's like, gosh, you wish it was taxed like cigarettes and alcohol, but it's not. And it's so common. And, you know, it's one of those things that really can drive blood sugar up too. And people who just sometimes even simply remove massive amounts of POP or sugary drinks in their diet can half their medication. But it's hard to, you know, you get in these cycles, and we all have them. You know, some people's are more significant than others or more dramatic than others, but where it's hard to break the cycle. And sometimes you need that personalized information to go, okay, now I really see what this is doing. So now I'm called to a different place to act upon it. And that's what the CGM can do for people. It's a really powerful tool for behavior change. And almost everything we do in medicine, we can prescribe till we're blue in the face. We can educate till we're blue in the face. It's finding that spot where we can help people drive behavior change that really makes the most powerful difference.
Absolutely.
And CGM is a tool to do that.
It is an amazing tool. Let me ask you this, because I'm such a, I love meditation. I meditate. I try to meditate every day. And if I was wearing a CGM, could you see you know, could you tell that I was meditating every day with my blood sugar? And have you seen anything like this? How, because we talked about stress earlier, and, you know, one of the best things to reduce stress, especially if you're traveling or anywhere in life, is really a meditation, even if it's only 20 minutes a day. And I'm just wondering if you can really tell that somebody.
Yes. Yeah, it's a great question, Jeffrey. And, you know, I would say we have seen stress cause significant blood glucose rises in people with and without diabetes. And then to counter that, we've seen people who've taken stress reduction practices and been able to really balance and control their blood sugar. So it's really powerful to see how that can improve someone's blood sugar. Cortisol, which is released when we have a stress response, blocks your body's ability to use insulin.
Yeah.
Cortisol is like a wall for your insulin to reach your cell, right?
Yeah.
So anything that you can do, including meditation, to reduce that cortisol, because most of us don't need to live in fight or flight as often as we do, you'll see a great benefit. And that's also really rewarding too. I mean, talk about behavior change. It's not just always taking negative behaviors and making it positive, but it's kind of, it's, you know, rewarding, and it reinforces all the positive things that you're doing for your health. If you saw that, Jeffrey, if you were like, okay, you know, here's a crazy day in my life and see what that does with your blood sugars, and then doing something like your meditations, and what does that do? That reinforces for you that time that you've committed to that practice is valuable.
Absolutely.
And that's equally as important when we're talking about behaviors and just, you know, what we want to sustain in our behaviors as we go throughout our life.
Yeah. So the Point Retreats, you are focusing on eating whole foods for a multiple and a big range of different chronic diseases. You're teaching a lot about biohacking and chemicals and our environment, which is really, really interesting of how toxic our environment is nowadays. What else are you focusing on? Because you've really had some interesting retreats, because I look at them quite often, what you've got coming up. Can you give us a little, really, what some of your focuses are?
Yep, you bet. And thank you for watching the Point Retreats. We appreciate that. And we, you know, we're in an interesting space because we have not wanted to lock into any one dimension of health or wellness or medicine, because we believe, part of our platform is we believe we all have to come together to learn from each other to be able to have the greatest health and, you know, the most optimal health that we possibly can. So the biohacker space, they're like the most cutting edge researchers who research on themselves. And they have, there's an abundance of value in what those biohackers are doing. And people look at it as really extreme. I mean, I'll be honest with you, in the conventional medicine space, I know some of my colleagues are like, so what are you doing over there with the biohackers? That's a little out there. And I'm like, you know, in that space it is. But in 10 years, I guarantee you half of what those biohackers are doing are going to then be in PubMed studies.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it because some of them, you know, like Dave Asprey, these guys will spend $1 million on themselves and then tell us the results for free. You know, like, thank you. Thank you for telling me.
And I will tell you, having been in conventional medicine for 20 years, I've learned the most from a biohacker who's become a close colleague and friend named Thaddeus Owen with Primal Hacker. He's taught me more about new dimensions in health this last year that I've personally adopted. And I can personally, I know it's just anecdotal, but I can tell you from my own health, wellness, improvements, I've made great strides in some areas that have always been kind of trouble spots for me, like sleep, headaches, lighting, and EMFs. And those are things 5 years ago, I tell you, they were not on my radar, and I would have thought they were a little woo-woo.
Yes.
But now I'm just looking at it very differently, that they're just about 10, you know, 15 years ahead of everyone else. And not everything is going to, you know, pass the test of conventional medicine, but they're just ahead of the game. And so it's good to keep an eye on what they're doing.
Absolutely. I learned to, like, you know, turn my Wi-Fi off at night, to wear blue blocker glasses, to not put my phone in my hip pocket, you know, like really stuff that you wouldn't think of unless somebody out there is like, hey, this is damaging, you know.
Exactly. And it kind of goes to what we were talking about before, you know, conventional medicine is so stuck in extreme illness, sickness, disease, and we need that space too. But we need people who are like, what are we doing in today's modern world that's beneficial and not beneficial that we need to mitigate? And that's the biohacker space. They do it really well. And it has, they have, you know, what they do has great implications tying back to the conventional space. So sleep, right? Stress. I'm someone who struggles with sleep. I'm on my computer late at night. I would send doctors emails at 3 a.m. all the time. They're like, geez, you work a lot of hours. That's great. Because in conventional medicine, we like to think that we don't need sleep, and that makes us, you know, more valuable.
In the entrepreneur world, it's the same thing. It's, you know, less sleep, and the more you're working, you're revered.
Exactly. You know, exactly. You know, we think our stethoscope or white coats are going to somehow protect us from getting everything else, and it doesn't work that way. Well, something simple and inexpensive, like Thaddeus introduced, you know, or the blue blockers, like you said, and mitigating some of the EMFs, that, boy, I sleep completely different. I will tell you, because I wore in the CGM, as I've been testing all of this, my blood sugars have improved greatly just from using some of those newer cutting edge biohacking education components and, you know, ways to mitigate some of the stressors in life that impact things like blood sugar. And then you've got functional medicine and lifestyle medicine, which is using, you know, functional medicine is looking for the root cause of disease, and it can be a number of things, you know, from toxins to diet to, you know, your individual genotypes and genes that we need to look at, you know, what's turned on, what do we need to turn off, risks we have to assess. Lifestyle medicine, you're looking at the really well-researched and well-founded value in nutrition, in whole foods, in, you know, what do we, how do we eat to heal our bodies instead of insulting them? You know, how do we exercise best for our bodies, our age, our stress? And then, you know, looking at conventional medicine and trying to value everything that they have to offer too. And in the year ahead, we'll have that whole spectrum. And I know some people are kind of like, what are you doing here? Because I see everything from biohacking, and now you're having clinicians at the Continued Medical Education Conference.
Yeah.
We've had rooms full of all of them, and they've never done that before. They've never sat there and listened to each other. And Katie, Keto Katie, can attest to that. She's been to one where we had endocrinologists, primary care doctors, mind-body medicine practitioners, NTPs, dietitians, biohackers, nurses, personal trainers. And it is powerful. When we all get in the same room and talk, we're all seeing the same people. We all want to help people. Our hearts, our goals, our purpose, our passion are in the same place. But if we keep putting people in these little silos and we're working against each other and not respecting each other, then we're never going to get anywhere. So
yeah, I love the aspect of having professional retreats for people who are in the healthcare profession, whether it's, you know, the doctor or the nutritional therapist or the nutritionist or the acupuncturist. Like you said, we are all working together. We all should be on the same team and talking to each other. It's sometimes one or the other. You know, you hear an NTP, all doctors are terrible, or you hear the doctor saying, oh, that is woo-woo, it doesn't matter what you eat. You know, and neither of these answers are helpful and or true.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, everybody brings their distinct practice, education, knowledge, and all of it has value. And if we can start to figure out how we can better collaborate for that person, they're going to stay more engaged. Because nothing feels worse than seeing a few different practitioners and they're contradicting each other. I mean, that feels awful. And or even worse, like you said, putting each other down. And that doesn't really help motivate anybody to stay engaged in their health. And then people start to go do stuff like Dr. Google, and that's really even worse.
Right. Who knows what they'll come up with?
Yeah. And actually, it's really fun. I'll tell you this, Jeffrey. So in 2019, at the particular retreat that Katie was at, where we had this really diverse group of healthcare professionals in the same room, there was an endocrinologist and a naturopath who got into a little bit of a debate on adrenal fatigue, as you can probably, you know, well imagine. So long story short, we kind of all sat through that hour of wondering, you know, if we should cut the conversation off sooner than later. But where it led to was really productive. And those two now cross-refer patients to one another because they finally had a conversation about what it meant to treat the patient from their perspective or their practice.
Right.
And they really deep respect for each other. And now they are coming together to host a retreat together that will have a large focus on blood sugars and adrenal fatigue.
Wow.
In 2019 at the point of retreats. And up until that point, I guarantee you they both probably had kind of given up on the other one's specialty. Let's just say not, you know, person, but the specialty. Kind of like, well, if I send my patient to an endocrinologist, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, it's going to be no good. That's probably, you know, what the naturopath thought. And the endocrinologist was like, I'm not going to go send them to the woo-woo naturopath. Cross-referring, and they're bringing case studies together on patients they've now treated. And how much more value that is for that patient to have two clinicians who are working together and collaborating. They're bringing different perspectives, but, you know, when health is complicated, usually one person doesn't have all the answers.
That's
it's
right.
It's going to take people to figure this out and help and support.
It's amazing to have a team and people you can bounce ideas off of, and because this stuff does get complicated, you know, and you know, you're looking at symptoms, you know, and obviously as an NTP, we don't really diagnose anybody. I just look at the symptoms and instead of asking what it is, ask why, you know, and try to solve it from that issue and to give the support to help people. And sometimes it's great to have two or three people to say, hey, listen, have you seen this or have you seen that? And it just makes everybody perform at a higher level.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you can't really, you know, you won't accomplish all that people want to accomplish in terms of their health or disease management if you're not, you know, looking at it from all of those different angles, because you can't, diabetes as an example is really complicated. I mean, people who lived with diabetes, as you know, Jeffrey, it's really complicated. And anyone who tries to simplify it is doing it an injustice, because it's really hard to manage. And you need support from a lot of different angles to get to where you want to be in your health goals.
Absolutely. And one of the most important things too is self-education. The reason I'm an NTP now, moving from being a professional chef and more and more into NPP, is because I had issues and I wasn't getting the help I wanted. So I just did a deep dive into research myself. You know, okay. And then from there, I was like, well, if I can solve this inflammation issue, because I was in chronic pain with my ankle in my calf, if I can solve this chronic issue, what else can I solve with nutrition? They took a deep dive and a deep dive. And people need to know that they can educate themselves. You know, there's and I'll ask you this question as somebody who is really updated. What is your favorite book right now that people can educate themselves on with in with a diet and blood sugar regulation? Do you have anything that you're super in love with?
You know, that is a really good question.
Because there's none out there, Harley, right?
There's a lot out there, and all of them have good components to them. You know, that's my humble opinion. I would say I would honestly recommend Sarah Godfrey. She's got a couple of different books out. They aren't necessarily particular for blood sugar, but they all address blood sugar in the book, in the context of the book. And she's a Harvard-trained MD who studied functional lifestyle medicine. And I think Dr. Sarah Godfrey just has a lot of really solid research, solid information. And she takes things in terms of how to keep and sustain health kind of for the long-term goals, for longevity. You know, and she looks at different hormones, and, you know, insulin is a hormone.
Yep.
And she dives in deep, and she gives people really practical steps that they can take to improve their health. So personally, I like Dr. Sarah Godfrey, but I could name 20 different researchers, educators, clinicians who I think are phenomenal. We've been fortunate to have some fantastic speakers at The Point this last year. Dr. Sachin Patel, he's a chiropractor researcher. He's phenomenal.
Yeah,
Dr. Ben House, Dr. Mike Nelson. I mean, they've taught me an abundance this year. And everybody who sat in the room with them, it's like we just all keep learning from each other.
Yeah. And I love that, because and why people need to educate themselves, because, you know, let's say I read the whole 30 diet book and I try to do that and something's not working right. It's great, but there's something's wrong. And then, you know, because we're all bio individual. And so not every, there's no specific diet that's going to work fantastic 100% for you. You need to make tweaks and adjustments based on who you are and what your needs are. And so educating yourself with this book and that book and this podcast and this other, you know, website, really gives you a broader range of knowledge that you can pick and choose from to really find out what's best for you.
Absolutely. And you're so right. And that changes, right? With every decade of age, changes with your life circumstances.
Absolutely.
And I think it's so wise. I mean, I've read a lot of great keto books. I've read Mark Sassoon's, you know, Keto Reset, and it was fabulous. I mean, I keep reading. I mean, my husband's like, please stop buying health and wellness aesthetic books. As you can see,
I do. I love it.
Way too many. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
And there's something valuable for each person. And, you know, you might get a diagnosis at some point, or life might take a turn at some point, and one thing will be of more value than another. There's those general things that we can say are really helpful for everybody. But we have to keep learning. And you know, it's interesting. We need people like you who are willing to kind of take things into their own hands and look at different ways of how to present health and wellness. And we need people who will be change agents. I mean, as we know health and wellness medicine today, it shouldn't be as it is today and 20 years from now. Like, we need to keep pushing. We need to keep changing. We need to keep evolving. And one of the things that when I was in conventional medicine, I was kind of, well, it's followed me a little bit. I've been called a rabble rouser. Sorry, if my dad gave me that name. So it's been a few years I've had it.
Wear it like a badge.
You know, I've accepted it like a badge. I'm starting to wear it like one. So I used to be like, I don't know if I should, you know, don't say that out loud to too many people. And now people, yeah, I've embraced it, as have others. But when I was having a retreat, actually the first unofficial retreat I had at the Point Retreat, because I took our diabetes team up to the Point, and we had a team retreat up there, and this was 6-7 years ago, and I asked all of them to read Wheat Belly. Mm. And boy, I will tell you, you want to hear a controversial conversation, you get a bunch of diabetes nurse educators, primary care docs, endocrinologists, and RDs in a room and ask them to read Wheat Belly. And I should have brought some boxing gloves into our book club meeting on Wheat Belly. But it was really fun. And what I was trying to encourage is, if we continue to just only look at, which conventional medicine tends to look at, is ADA, which has a place and a purpose, but if that's where we keep things and we never go beyond that or challenge ourselves beyond that, we're really limiting what we can do for our patients. And so, if you know, that was a struggle for me. I really embraced ADA for a while, and then I quickly became the rabble rouser who's like, you know, I think we can do better. Like, I think there's so, I think we can do a lot better than this. And it was in those challenges that we grew the most as a team. It was fun to see people start to think outside the box. And I see NTPs as really embracing that, you know, we want to do the most that we possibly can for this person. And we're not going to just kind of settle for here. Like, we're going to push people to be the best and the most optimal health here. And I love that about the NTP program, and what you can bring is so profound to people. And so I think, you know, it takes people like NTPs such as yourself, Jeffrey, and Katie, who I know well, to keep, you know, kind of like your biohacking, right? Like the nutrition space.
For
you guys
sure.
are pioneering like our most advanced new therapies and nutrition, which is awesome. Because the ADA, again, does so many powerful, great things. But if we stay there forever and ever and ever, like that's not a good thing either. And that's not really helping people achieve the best that they can. So it takes people from all spectrums to be challenging each other.
And I say hashtag grassroots, right? Because optimal health, fighting chronic illness from a nutritional or a holistic or a lifestyle or any illness, right? This paradigm, right, has to grow grassroots. It's from the podcasts out there. It's from the retreats out there. It's from, you know, the blogs out there. It's from people getting out there and say, hey, you know, N equals one. This has worked for me. You know, what do we think about this? And it just grows from there. And you see how, for instance, the carnivore diet or the keto diet are so huge now and so popular because it's worked for so many people. Has it worked for everybody? Nope. But, you know, it has worked for a ton of people, you know. And when you have doctors and other people like having extremely phenomenal results by nutrition alone, you know, change their lifestyle in their ultimate health, it's proof that we can do it. You know,
absolutely. I mean, you know, you look at the head-to-head studies of metformin and lifestyle, and metformin is, generally speaking, a great drug for diabetes. I mean, it's been around a long time. It's relatively safe. It's pretty cheap. It's been well studied. It's pretty effective, but it does not compare, and it fails compared to lifestyle interventions.
Yeah.
I mean, nutrition first, exercise second, are so incredibly powerful that, you know, one of our biggest studies in the New England Journal of Medicine is lifestyle medicine compared to metformin, and lifestyle interventions surpass metformin, you know, by leaps and bounds statistically. Now, you know, not everybody's motivated right out of the gate to make those changes. And if I'm sitting at an A1C of, you know, 8 or 7.5, but it is getting that message across in terms of the power that people have to really manage their own health. You know, but it's going back to that. That's where NTPs shine, and you know, even our, you know, RDs shine, and nurses shine, and so many other clinicians do, but we all have our scope of which we've learned, and clinicians learn pharmaceuticals and surgical interventions first and foremost. And so oftentimes they don't have time to talk about nutrition or exercise, and or they don't, they often will feel like they aren't doing it themselves, so how can they preach it? Or they don't even know what to preach, because we all hear this as a, what is it now? Is it gluten-free? Is it keto? Is it paleo? Is it, the carnivore diet? Like, what should I really recommend? And how much time do we all have to sit and dive into the studies, if there are any, on some of those different diets? So then they kind of opt to say nothing and go to what they know, which is, here's your metformin.
Right. And it's not a conversation that you can have in 7 to 12 minutes. You know, like I spend hours looking at my clients' data and what they have to say to me and how they're reacting to food. And I'm looking at their food journal and their, interview, their initial interview that they do. And then, you know, all their symptoms. And like, really, it's not a 7-10 minute conversation to help somebody with their diet. It's, you know, it's in depth and it takes a while to look at it. And
It's really complicated. Yeah. It is. And kind of switching gears a little bit here, Jeffrey, but that is part of the reason we're seeing a lot of burnout in our providers, is because they, I think in and of themselves, I mean, people who choose to go through medical school, most of them truly want to help people.
Absolutely.
And most of them do. But I think with when it comes to chronic disease, there is this cycle that feels kind of hopeless for both patient and clinician, mm-hmm. where their patients keep coming sicker and sicker and sicker. And because of that, clinicians are also getting more burnt out. And that's something else that we will be addressing at the point in 2019, is we're going to be having self-care retreats for clinicians where they get their continuing medical education credits. And then they also learn more components of self-care, because it is such a tiny, minute part of medical school training. And oftentimes, you know, the pressures and demands that they have take away from their own ability to care for themselves.
Sure.
And then that kind of translates into how they end up, you know, treating their patients. So we're trying to look at changing the way that we approach care in the health, wellness, medical space from both the person, patient, preventatives, perspective, management. And then we're also trying to reach that clinician realm too, because really the clinicians need a lot of support and are fighting a really hard battle themselves. And they need this information often just as much as the people that you're working with who come to you for NTP, you know, training and education and counseling and coaching. The clinicians need it too.
Absolutely. It's, you know, because the doctor doesn't really decide how many patients he's going to see, right? The insurance company or the hospital or the people above him are telling him or her doctor, like, you need to see this many people and this is what you need to schedule. Yeah.
Right. And you have 7 minutes to fix all their world's problems.
Right.
Which is a lot. I mean, they carry a lot on their shoulders, and we're seeing a lot of issues with that in terms of, we're really switching gears here, but I just gave a talk at the University of Minnesota to the medical students on their own personal health and wellness. And we talked a lot about that and how, with the challenges that they face now in terms of how they're confined and the care they're able to deliver, it's causing a significant amount of burnout and depression and suicide. So even in our medical space, you know, where we're supposed to help people be healthy and well, we've got a lot of work to do, even within the clinician and healthcare professional own well-being. So something we have to keep working on.
Absolutely. Awesome. So to end the podcast, I'd like to have you tell the audience one biohack or self-care or one ultimate anything that is the best takeaway for them.
Hold on one second.
Yep. So my guest had to run off for a couple seconds here, which is completely normal in my podcast, because I was just telling the audience that you had to run out of the room real quick, which is perfect, because I always stress, like, nothing ever goes right. It's always something's goofy or whatever, and it's all good because it's real life. You know, it's what happens.
Yes. I had a Halloween here, and I had, you know, one of my kiddos come home and my dog was about to bark, and I was trying to spare your listeners from hearing all of that kiddos.
Hey, on their cortisol, that's crazy. My first podcast, my phone rang twice. I didn't turn it off.
Yeah. Well, that brief intermission. Okay, I'm back. And your question was, it's been one of the number one biohacks?
Well, I'm looking for a perfect takeaway that you have for the listeners? What's one great takeaway that you, some bit of knowledge, whether it be a biohack or anything that you have that the listeners must know from you?
Gosh, you know what? Thank you for that question. It's a really good question. I would say it is the fact that within ourselves, we hold a tremendous amount of opportunity and power to heal ourselves. And it doesn't matter if you're starting that journey or if you've been on that journey for a long time. Don't ever minimize what you can do to really optimize your own health. And I know that sounds really broad and really general, but I think it's really hard for people to stay motivated in terms of living in today's society, because as we turn every corner, there's always something that will pull us to a space of being less healthy. And I just want to give the message to people that there are people like you, Jeffrey. There are people like a whole group of NTPs, nurses, doctors, chiropractors, naturopaths, trainers. There's so many people who genuinely want to help and support that don't ever stop searching for more for yourself. And don't ever stop believing in what you can do to create your own change in your health destiny, because no person has more power to control that than you do.
Absolutely.
And I hope people just feel a lot of power in that, because if you are sitting there and you are wheelchair bound on an insulin pump, there is hope for you to have greater health. I can guarantee you that. If you are on Remicade and have horrible joint pain and can't keep food down, there is hope that you can have better health. If you are a 30-year-old watching your parents struggle with their own health, you don't have to have the same trajectory of health as they have. We have so much information now and so many people who have the ability to help that there is a great hope and power in what one can do for themselves with the knowledge and support of the great clinicians around them.
Absolutely. That's awesome. It's very inspiring. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for being on Mountain Man Nutrition. I really appreciate you. And keep up the awesome work. What you're doing is absolutely amazing, and it's cutting edge. And thank you very much for doing it.
Yeah, thank you, Jeffrey. I really appreciate you having me on your podcast today, and I hope we see you at the point in 2019.
I can't wait to get up there. Let's make it happen.
You can cook us a meal that's going to blow our minds and keep our blood sugars in check.
Sounds like a plan.
Wonderful.
Have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Hey, this is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition again. And if you like the podcast you just heard, tell a friend. Share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it on Twitter. Wherever you can share it, tell somebody who can benefit from it. Because that's why I'm here and that's why I'm doing this podcast, is to benefit as many people as possible. Millions and millions of Americans have suffered from type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and continue to suffer. So if we can benefit them in any way, shape, or form with this podcast, I want to do that. So please share it with your friends. Get on iTunes and give me a 5-star rating if you liked it, 5 stars. And then write a little blog about it, or a little say something about it so other people can find it that you're not sharing it with. You know, the more people who listen, the more benefit we can do for others, and you can be a part of that. And I'm asking you to be part of that. So let's share this podcast as often as possible. Thank you very much, and good wishes to you.